Blog Talk Radio.
Your next question comes from the line of Bob Carson. Carson.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner. With Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show. I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Once again, this is Carson's Corner, and my name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you July 3rd, 2018. It's just after 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here, and we have a great show for you as always. We're going to be previewing UFC 226 in just a few moments. I want to talk about that because supposedly this is the biggest card of the year for the UFC. You've got two title fights on this card. It really features some very, very exciting fights, and I can't wait to break it down here, right here on Carson's Corner. A little later on, hopefully in the second hour, we're going to be talking to our good friend, longtime MMA fighter Aaron Brink will be on the program. Aaron's got a lot going on, as always, and you're very, very familiar with his story, undoubtedly, and it's time to play a little catch-up here with Mr. Aaron Brink. He'll be on in the second hour. Very, very pleased to welcome him back to the program. It's been a while since we've had him on, and he's a good friend of mine. I consider Aaron to be a friend. I hope you on the East Coast are staying cool. My God, it is ridiculously hot out there. Now, don't forget that I do not have any air conditioning where I'm at right now, okay? My room has no way of getting air conditioning in it. My window is broken. It doesn't go all the way up, so I can't even put one of those cheap window units in my window, one of those cheap air conditioning units that the poor always use. There's just nothing I could do. So I'm like literally roasting in my room. It's over. Sometimes it's well over 100 degrees, and in my room, 90 degrees outside, it's 100 degrees in my room because I live on the third floor of this house and the heat travels up. And, the first two floors of my house are very, very cool. You know, it's very, very comfortable. And then you just go up to the third floor and it's just like it's stifling heat. You know, that's what happens. The heat becomes stifling. It becomes overwhelming. Imagine what it's like for people in the inner cities. I was talking to a buddy at work last week, and he was telling me that he was from in the Bronx. And when it got really hot, the heat tends to condense at the street level, and you could see the steam running up from the ground and all the smog. And it's like, so, you know, I often think as bad as I have it here where I'm at, and somebody else in some inner city, particularly in New York, where you've got high buildings and you just got smog and potentially an unsafe environment. You've got cars just in, and everybody's very congested in the city. They have it much worse. I mean, I'm right on the ocean. I'm right on the Atlantic Ocean, and that's where I've been spending a lot of my time. Is the Atlantic Ocean. Today, I went to Pier Village. Pier Village is a nice little resort here in Long Branch. I'm probably about a half a mile away from it right now, Pier Village. And I went and paid the $2 an hour for parking, which is just absolutely absurd. Asbury Park, I think it's a little bit more expensive, but, just forgive me. All right, great. I just got confirmation from Kern Jacobs. Okay, just give me one second. Show some respect. I'm just writing something here. My computer is screwed up here. Just kind of freezing. That's something else I wanted to talk to you about, Kern Jacobs. We're going to talk about the catch wrestling tournament coming up. And my covering of this event, very, very excited about that. I went to Long Branch today. Deal. I live in Long Branch, and so, you know, it's really, really nothing for me to go to the beach. Like I said, I'm about maybe 400 yards away from the Atlantic Ocean right now. If I go out my house and I make a right, then I can literally hit the Atlantic Ocean, which is really cool. It's really, really nice here. I really, really enjoy staying here. And so I went to the beach today. And, I got a parking spot. And right when I got on the beach, New Jersey TV, I guess there's a TV station now. Looks like it's a part of the public broadcast, PBS. They were broadcasting right on Pier Village, right on the boardwalk there. And it was really, really nice. They had a whole bunch of TV cameras. They were doing a whole bunch of – it basically is an infomercial for the state. They were talking about the Jersey Shore and tourists and the different parks and you know, how tourism it helps New Jersey economy and how it creates jobs and all of this stuff. And it was pretty cool. They were showing different parts of Pier Village. They were showing, Asbury Park. They had some really, really fat reporter there. I mean, bigger than me. I mean, this you typically don't see heavy people on television. And they had this guy, he went down to Wildwood, and then I forget his name, this guy. And he was a reporter for NJTV. And it was pretty interesting. I walked up and down the boardwalk, got a little exercise. Watched some volleyball games, watched some pretty nice-looking girls going by, although I'm very, very critical when I'm looking at these girls. You know, like, if they have the slightest bit of cellulite, I saw a lot of girls that, you know, and when I say girls, I'm talking about, adults, obviously, here, okay? I don't want you to get the wrong impression there. But, you know, sometimes they have the loose skin in the back, they have cellulite, it looks disgusting. They have stretch marks, and, you know, you would see, like, a pretty decent-looking girl, then you just examine them in the back, and it's like, whoa, I don't think you should be wearing a bathing suit when your legs and your backside just look like golf balls. It's just really disgusting, you know? I saw a lot of that, but I also saw, you know, girls that definitely were very, very attractive, and so... It was really, really good. It was a good experience for me to go out there and to get a little exercise and to deal with the heat. You know, that's my way dealing with the heat because I can't stay inside. I had off today, and so I go outside, and I love to be around the beach. I could tell you that, you know, the police are out and about, obviously, you know, to keep the riffraff out and to make sure that, you know, everything is okay there. You had just a massive police presence there, as is the case in Asbury Park. I went to Asbury Park over the weekend, you know, just a lot of police there and parking enforcement and all these different groups, beach rescue and everything out there. Like I said, I don't have a problem with it. I can understand why it's happening. They want to preserve these communities. The last thing they want is for any type of crime to happen. So you have police presence there. Some of these guys look like they were auxiliary police officers, young kids, 18, 19 years old. And, you know, it wasn't anything, you know, too heavy there. But that's what you can expect going down to the beach at this time, and you know, just seeing police there, making sure everything is in an orderly fashion there, and everything stays pristine where I was at. So I had a really, really good time, and it was good to get out there. Now I'm here with you on Blog Talk Radio. I'm also streaming live on Facebook. We've got the Facebook stream, so if you want to chime in, using the Facebook stream, you can. I hope that I'm coming out loud and clear. And if you want to give me a call on Blog Talk Radio, you can at 347-326-9749. 347-326-9749, ladies and gentlemen. What do we got going on in the sport of mixed martial arts? We have a lot going on in the sport of mixed martial arts this week. I believe it's International Fight Week, whatever the hell that means. Nobody knows what that means anymore. What does that mean? What, the UFC is going to have a whole bunch of displays in Las Vegas? What is, you know, International Fight Week? It's a label that they give. I don't know. You've got also too the Ultimate Fighter finale taking place this Friday. And I don't really care. I don't think too many people care about the Ultimate Fighter anymore. I mean, come on. This has run its course, you know, 10, 12, 13 years ago. The ratings are very low. And I don't think anybody really even cared that Stipe and Cormier were the coaches on this season. I mean, I could tell you that I haven't watched a minute of this season's Ultimate Fighter. And I can't remember the last time I watched The Ultimate Fighter. It's really it's an out-of-date show. And I think what the UFC is going to do is they're going to replace it with this Dana White Contender Series show coming up next year when the ESPN deal goes into effect. You probably won't see The Ultimate Fighter anymore, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, the Ultimate Fighter, they're selling the house now. I just never was really a big fan of the show. I mean, if you're talking about producing contenders and you're talking about producing fighters, you know, that you could add to the roster, then you don't need to go through all this crap with the house and you know, giving fighters, locking them up in the house and giving them booze and you know, watching them act like fraternity kids. You know, you don't need that. So they're pushing the Dana White Contender Series, and I think that'll eventually replace the Ultimate Fighter, which, again, I'm fine with. I really, really don't care for that show. So I don't even know who's fighting on the Ultimate Fight Night finale. I don't even know, you know, what fights are taking place, because like I said, I really, really don't care. I really don't. However, the day after that, July 7th, you've got UFC 226, and that's something that I'm definitely looking forward to. because you have, quote, a super fight between Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight championship. Now, Daniel Cormier, of course, is the light heavyweight championship. He essentially, you know, let's see, he lost his last two fights. He lost his fight to John Jones, but then it was overturned because Jones tested positive. Who did Daniel win the light heavyweight belt from? I'm just like, so he beat Ozdemir. I don't know if that was for the title at light heavyweight. He's beaten pretty much everybody at light heavyweight and obtained the belt. So from my memory fogs me right now. I don't remember, you know, who specifically he beat, whether it was, you know, Jones lost the belt and he fought for the belt. He won the belt somehow. and he's the light heavyweight champion and he's undefeated as a heavyweight fighter. And so, you know, this is the real only fight that they can make because, like I said, Daniel has fought everybody at light heavyweight. He beat Gustafson in a very controversial split decision, I believe. He beat Anthony Rumble Johnson twice. He beat Ozdemir. And there's just not a lot of fighters at 205 that are really, you know, going to be able to challenge Daniel at this point because, like I said, he's run through the division. I'm trying to get – I don't have access to the internet here, or my internet is, of course, very slow, and I'm trying to get access to Daniel's record here. There we go. Now I should have it. And I can give you, you know, more a clear indication of who he's fought, but you get the point. He's fought everybody. He's beaten everybody at light heavyweight, with the exception of John Jones. But John Jones has really invalidated himself. You know, there's just no reason I think to even continue to talk about John Jones. But people, the UFC marks, they love talking about John Jones and. Oh, John Jones is one of the, got to be considered the greatest of all time. That's ridiculous. Is Sammy Sosa the greatest of all time? Is Mark McGuire, would we regard Mark McGuire or Sammy Sosa as the greatest of all time? No, absolutely not, because they've invalidated themselves by using drugs, by being a cheater. You know, it's like somebody that gets a 1400 on their SATs, but they cheated. You know, they had cheat sheets. Would you give them credit for having a perfect SAT score? No, of course not. So John Jones really shouldn't be in any type of conversation for being the greatest of all time. But again, MMA fans have a very, very short attention span, and they respond to, you know, the UFC propaganda out there. You know, it's not to be, it's to be expected. You know what happened, and everything. So, you know, he's fought everybody. He won the title. It was vacated. Yes, he won it versus Anthony Johnson. That's right. And then he defended it, you know, against Anderson Silva. No, that was a non-title bout. He defended it against Ozdemir, Johnson, Kurt Cobain. No, I'm just kidding. He defended it against Gustafson, and so, you know, that's why he's moving up to heavyweight now. There's really no contenders for him to fight at light heavyweight. And Daniel's fought at heavyweight before, was the Pride heavyweight tournament champion, was undefeated, as I mentioned, as a heavyweight. And even I think in wrestling, I think he was saying that he was undefeated as a heavyweight as a wrestler. And so now he's fighting Stipe, who's an NCAA Division I champion, I believe, at Cleveland State, Golden Gloves boxing champion, heavyweight fighter who's fought and He's defended his belt more than any other heavyweight in history, 3 times, and is really, really, you know, the greatest heavyweight of all time. Okay, there's no question about that. So that's really the main fight that everybody's looking forward to. And it does have a potential not to be an exciting fight. I think, you know, both these guys are going to be jockeying for position. Cormier is going to be trying to look for, inside striking, and he may even work on leg kicks and trying to get inside and try to push the pace, much like his friend Cain Velasquez does. And Stipe is going to try to neutralize him with his overhand right and just his movement, which I think is better than Cormier's movement, although Cormier has deceptively fast forward movement and feints and all of that. So, it could be I don't see this fight being stopped at all. I think that the fight will go the distance for sure. So, we'll most likely see Cormier lose a decision. We'll most likely see Stipe retain his championship and win with some unanimous decision, because I don't think Daniel's going to be able to get Cormier down. I think it's going to be a hard task for him to do that. I think both of their wrestling will neutralize each other, and it'll just be a stand-up fight, and that'll be it. Very cautious stand-up fight. But supposedly this is the biggest pay-per-view that the UFC has all year. Now, the thing about it is that I don't see anybody talking about this pay-per-view. Now, the UFC, as I've talked about, has been in a real pay-per-view rut, okay? They lost their stars. They lost Ronda Rousey. They lost Conor McGregor. Nobody knows what's going on with Conor McGregor. He's not going to fight probably this year. Doesn't look like it. He's got the court case. I think that was pushed back. Nobody knows. And you know what? He may come back, and he may not even be himself anymore. You have a very, very short shelf life. Could lose, and then he becomes irrelevant. So, I think when he comes back, he'll sell a lot of pay-per-views. It's not going to be as many as was the case, 2-3 years ago when he's fighting Diaz, when he fought Eddie Alvarez. It's just different, it's different. And so, nobody knows what's going on with him. John Jones is a disgrace. We talked about that. The last decent-selling UFC pay-per-view was UFC 214. I was at that card, and it sold over 800,000 pay-per-view buys. I don't think this UFC coming up here is going to get anywhere near that. I think the UFC would be lucky to get 400,000 or 500,000 pay-per-view buys with this card coming up. There's a lot of things that are going on right now that's going to affect that. It's 4th of July. You've got the World Cup. You've got, people are obsessing over this LeBron James thing. I don't know what's going on. I guess he's going to another team or something. And so it's just there's not a lot of excitement or attention going on to this card. And, people are having difficulty spending the $60, $70 to watch these pay-per-views. It's just not happening anymore. It used to be that you could depend on the hardcore fans to buy pay-per-views, 100,000, 200,000 people. But it doesn't seem like that's even happening anymore, because it's just too damn expensive. And, I know that in 2019, you're going to probably see less pay-per-views and more streaming content. That seems to be the direction that Bellator and the UFC has gone. But the UFC, wants to hold on to this pay-per-view model, and I can understand that to a certain extent. But I don't know really how well it's going to work out for them in the future, because they're not replacing the retired stars with new stars, regardless of what anybody says. There's a difference between, you know, being a star and being a pay-per-view star. You know, arguably the UFC has a lot of stars. They have Tyron Woodley. They have Colby Covington. They've got their champions. They've got a lot of people that they've pushed and, you know, can put on a main event for a UFC, you know, televised event. But nobody's gonna, not a lot of people is gonna pay to watch them fight, and that's a whole different level of a star, and they just don't have that. So I don't think UFC 226 is really gonna do a lot in terms of pay per view. Hello to Sean Salmon, Corey Williams, and Sean Drew. Thank you very much for joining. Sean Salmon, what's going on, man? You got to go to Jonathan Ivey's Facebook page. Jonathan Ivey has said that you didn't want to fight him, or something, or that you got sick or something like that. I don't know the circumstances, but that'd be a great fight. And Corey and Sean, thank you very much for joining. I appreciate it. So, you know, again, I don't think that this is going to be the biggest pay-per-view of the year. It will be in terms of my interest, but I think it's bad timing on the part of the UFC. And just the stagnant pay-per-view model that we have right now is not going to let up anytime soon. So we're going to see what the numbers are. I'm curious to see what the numbers, but nonetheless, this is a very, very interesting card. You know, I talked a little bit about the heavyweight fight between Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic. Stipe Miocic is actually, he said he's having a child, and after this fight, after the press conference, he'll be getting on a plane and going to watch his child be born or whatever. I watched some of the embeddeds, and I got to tell you, I hate to say this, but I don't know about it. You know, Stipe's talked about his wife and how his wife controls him, and I don't know if you want to sign up for that, Stipe. I mean, this lady looks like a little. I've seen controlling wives before, and controlling females, and it gets very, very annoying. I think she's a little bit too demanding here, Stipe. Come on, that's just my opinion. I don't know, but. So he's got a lot of things going on in his mind. However, he talked about pay and he seemed to come to terms with the UFC in terms of pay. And this will be the greatest payday, that he will receive. And that's good for him. So he's got that. Now, Daniel, on the other hand, Daniel has actually talked about the possibility that if he doesn't win, then he may retire. And I think that makes sense. You know, Daniel's 39 years old. He could probably do this for another few years, no question about it. But, you know, if he loses to Daniel, or if he loses to Stipe, there really is no room going forward. There's no opportunity for him. You know, Stipe will retain, and Stipe will fight, you know, whoever wins, presumably this. They have Ngannou as the number one contender, which I think is terrible, but maybe he'll fight Ngannou. Maybe he'll fight Volkov. Who knows? They don't have many heavyweights in the heavyweight division. UFC, the heavyweight division is one of their weaker divisions there, but who knows what's going to happen. But Daniel has no room. He's got nowhere to go if he loses this fight. You know, I don't want to see him fight John Jones again. John Jones is a drug cheat. He's invalid. And it does Daniel nothing to fight him again. I just, you know, I don't want to see that. And where's he going to go? He's probably going to have to retire. And then, you know, we can have this obligatory discussion about the greatest of all time. To me, I never like engaging in those discussions because there's no way to determine who's the greatest of all time. It's almost like a conversation without an end. It's an endless conversation. And so you could say that fighters belong in the Hall of Fame, but arguing who's the greatest of all time is just ridiculous. I've never liked those arguments. But he'll have nowhere to go. He's 39 years old. He'll coach. He'll you know, still be involved with his teammates over there at the American Kickboxing Academy. And life goes on. He'll be an analyst forever at ESPN. And, you know, life will go on for Daniel Cormier. But I think that's a real likely outcome if he loses on Saturday, okay? Which I believe they've got Stipe as the betting favorite. I think Stipe is a minus 200 favorite or something along those lines. So there's a good chance, as I said, Stipe is going to win a unanimous decision there. And that'll be it for Daniel, and then we'll see what happens with Stipe. Was it, you're going to have that clown Brock Lesnar in the building? Is that going to be the next thing now? They're going to have Lesnar fight the winner of this. You know, Lesnar, what's up with his USADA suspension? Is he in the USADA testing pool? What are they going to do? They're going to reinstate him and then have that fight 6 months down the road, so you know they could push along a doped up Lesnar and have him fight. You know, it's just a ploy for any type of a pay per view buys, depending upon these WWE guys. But that's what they may have. There's been some talk about that. I haven't read the reports, but Lesnar is somehow involved. Lesnar is not done with MMA. So we'll see him. And I could really care less. You know, I'm sorry. I'm just not interested in seeing Lesnar anymore fight in mixed martial arts. But, you know, again, the UFC, they got to do what they got to do. And we may see Lesnar fight again. Also have on the card Francis Ngannou versus Derek Lewis. Now, they didn't give Derek Lewis any time in the embedded videos, and I was very disappointed in that. I really was. You've got Francis Ngannou in the embedded videos. Francis Ngannou has been a long favorite of the UFC and Dana White. You know, he still, for some reason, is the number one contender, even though he lost handedly to Stipe. He didn't lose his ranking. You know, you can't really put too much faith in the UFC rankings at all. So, you know, he has that. So even if he loses this fight versus Derek Brunson, which I don't think he will, I think he'll be able to catch Lewis. But, you know, it could go either way. Lewis could withstand him and then, you know, take him out in a later lot of rounds, as he's done to Tabora and other fighters Lewis has faced. But even if Francis loses, you know, he'll typically the same in terms of title contention. Although you've got this Curtis Blaydes, who's, what, 4 or 5? And Curtis Blaydes just coming off of a victory over Alistair Overeem. Francis beat Curtis Blaydes, but that was a while ago. And so, you know, there's no telling what would happen if they fought again. And so, you know, you got this heavyweight fight that really, it doesn't mean a lot in terms of the division out there. Okay. You know, because if Derek Lewis wins, you know, he's still probably not going to be the next guy to get a title shot, my guess. You'd probably have to give it to either Curtis Blaydes, who, you know, had a devastating victory over Alistair Overeem and has the most takedowns of any heavyweight, I believe, in the UFC. But Curtis Blaydes is not really an exciting fighter. You know, I mean, he's just not. He's not. I don't think he's ever going to be a pay-per-view draw, but you know, you can't argue his success. But that's really it. So the UFC has to work on their heavyweight division. There's a lot of fighters in from Europe, from former Soviet countries or former countries that were part of the Soviet Union that could really bolster the UFC heavyweight roster, okay? So I want to see more acquisitions. They got this guy from PLF, Blagoy Ivanov, who's a good fighter. There's Vitaly Minnikov, who I want to see them sign, who was an undefeated fighter, formerly fought in Bellator. So you've got a lot of Russian heavyweights out there that are pretty scary. And, you know, could wind up beating Stipe Miocic or, you know, some of the top UFC fighters. So we've got that to look forward to. Now, the next fight on this card, the next title fight is Max Holloway versus Brian Ortega. This is for the World Featherweight Championship. Now, this is a really, really interesting fight because Brian Ortega is coming off. He's undefeated. He's coming off a devastating victory over Frankie Edgar, which nobody predicted. Everybody was surprised. Really, first round, stoppage. He hit him with a good elbow, right elbow, and then an uppercut, and just really, really put Frankie out. We were all surprised by that. And this is a guy who, according to his trainer, Henner Gracie, gets stronger and stronger as the fight goes on. You know, he's comfortable in chaos, as they say, and he's proving everybody wrong, and he just has that durable fighting style. He's getting better with his hands. He's got a great guillotine choke. He's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. And he's a young guy, you know, he's a very, very young guy. And you got Max Holloway, you know, again, who defeats Jose Aldo twice, okay, just obliterated Jose Aldo, has not lost since Conor McGregor years ago, a guy who's just tough as nails, loves to fight, very, very good striker, very, very good wrestling, hasn't been taken down. He looks smaller than Ortega just by looking at them in the embedded videos, but he's a great fighter himself, and this is going to be a really, really great fight that, you know, I don't have any doubt that this fight is going to take place, and both these guys seem to be making weight. You know, you look at Brian Ortega, and he looks like he's in good shape. He looks like he doesn't have any injuries, although you never really can tell. I like Brian Ortega, except the fact that he was popped for marijuana. That's another thing I got to talk about. The prevalence of marijuana. We need to de-Roganize UFC, de-Roganize MMA. Other than that, the kid's got a great attitude. Brian, he's very, very mellow, very, very respectful of his opponents. He's a young guy. You know, he grew up seemingly in a bad circumstance, you know, poor family. His mother, I think, worked as a restaurant or worked at some sort of restaurant. I mean, he doesn't come from a wealthy background. You know, they showed his house, I forget where, maybe in Torrance, California, one of these. And, you know, his parents' house, they're not living high in the hog. You can jump from rooftop to rooftop, actually, there. And so I like that. I appreciate that, you know. He seems to be a very nice and humble kid. And I think, personally, I think he's going to win this fight. I think he's going to defeat Max Holloway. I think it's going to happen in the third or fourth round. I don't know how it's going to happen. You know, it may happen via guillotine. It may happen via punches. Or I don't know. I don't think Ortega loses his fight, you know, because you got to look. Both these guys have great cardio. Both of them have very, very good striking. But I just think that Ortega is the guy to beat. And I think he's on the rise. And, you know, as I've said with mixed martial arts, and I actually, this was actually first stated by Brian Stann, who now Brian Stann is an advisor of the PFL. What the hell does that mean? I don't know. They hire these guys as advisors, but Brian Stann once said that MMA is a game of streaks. It's a game of who's fighting the best at that moment and who's hottest at that moment. And, you know, again, you know, somebody like Ortega really, really is hot, and he's bringing in a winning streak into the UFC. The way he wins, the way he beat Edgar is indicative of a fighter who is on the rise, okay? And so, you know, sometimes with some fighters, you know, we saw this with Ronda, and we saw this with John Jones, you know, before he was revealed to be a drug cheat. So these fighters, young fighters, get better and better every time they're in the octagon. And, you know, they exceed their expectations. They grow in skill. It's like even the Rose Namajunas. You know, Rose Namajunas has gotten better as a fighter, even though she, you know, the first Joanna fight, Rose had a 6-3 record. But this is like a completely different Rose Namajunas now. You know what I mean? So the only thing I could say about Max Holloway that would be a tip in his cap, would be an advantage for him, is that he's fought the better opponents. I often forget. I mean, the last time he lost was to Conor McGregor. But if you look at who he's fought since then, you know, he's fought Jeremy Stephens. He beat Jeremy Stephens. I didn't know that. I forgot about that. You know, beat Ricardo Lamas, beat Pettis. Anthony Pettis has, you know, been on a roller coaster. Aldo twice. He beat Kurt Cobain. No, I'm just kidding. Beat Andre Feely, who's, you know, had some success. So, and this is a guy who hasn't lost in quite some time. And so that's just going to make this an interesting fight here. It really is. But I got to go with Ortega. I'm going with Ortega. Ortega may be the underdog, but nonetheless, I think Ortega is going to win that fight. Now, what else do we have on this card here? We got some other fights here. I'm trying to look up here. I know what's going on in the prelim fights. You've got Uriah Hall versus Paulo Costa. Paulo Costa. You know, Paulo Costa should blow through Hall, who's just completely inconsistent. He's all over the place. So let's see what else. Yeah, you've got Paul Felder versus Mike Perry. Mike Perry now training at Jackson Wink. Mike Perry is another head case. But you know, that should be an interesting fight. Paul Felder should win that fight. I think he's going to be a little bit more experienced there. Paul Felder, you know, fought at 155, but now he's moving up. He's fighting a welterweight, but you know, he's fought Edson Barboza. He's fought some, you know, heavy hitting guys there throughout his career, and I think Felder lost to Ross Pearson, and he lost to Barboza. And since then, you know, he's put on a pretty decent win streak there. His last fight was a victory over Charles Oliveira, who recently choked out Clay Guida. Actually, you know, I'm looking at this card now, and the main card really has just these three fights that I'm interested in. The Michael Chiesa and Anthony Pettis fight, I'm not really interested in that. I mean, I want to see what Chiesa does. He should be able to beat Pettis. You know, I would expect him to win that fight and move himself up. But he's, you know, he's sitting at number 9 in the rankings right now. And, you know, this is just a fight for him to stay busy. He should win this fight over, like I said, a very inconsistent Anthony Pettis. And, you know, we're going to have to see what happens there. Gokhan Saki versus Khalil Roundtree. Gokhan Saki, of course, the kickboxer from Amsterdam, who, you know, is just a world-class kickboxer. Coming off of a win versus Enrique da Silva, he's 1-1 in MMA, so I don't know if he's going to really develop into the star that the UFC was hoping, but you know, maybe he could put on an exciting fight, and they'll call him back if he has an exciting fight. And, you know, he has that brawling style that the UFC is looking for. So, I you know, like I said, I don't really care about that fight. You know, it'll who knows what's going to happen. I don't even really care to give a prediction on that. So that's really it. That's my pick, or those are my picks for UFC 226. I am looking forward to the card overall. Like I said, those three fights are the main fights for me, and we'll see what happens. You know, look, I'm about 50% of my picks. Okay, anybody that tells you that they are always right with their picks, or like 70% right, or 80%, they're lying, because there's really no way you can be, you know, more than 50% right in your picks on MMA fights and cards. You really can't. So, you know, I'm not telling you to lay down money based on what I'm saying here, but I'm just giving my picks and my predictions here. Okay. All right. You've also got, I want to say, coming up July 14th. And I want to talk a little about this here, because I'm really excited about this. You've got the 2018 Catch Wrestling Tournament, the Billy Robinson Tournament. And this is at Hamilton, New Jersey. What's the name of the gym? I don't have the name of the gym. Oh, wow. Extreme Couture is sponsoring this? How the hell did that happen? Is it the Primal Gym? Yeah, I'm going to say it's the Primal Gym there in Hamilton. This is a facility run by Snake Pit USA. And I'm very, very excited to be part of this. Now, I wasn't going to go to this. Eddie Goldman was going to go. Eddie was going to call me up, and I was going to pick Eddie up, because the last time Eddie and I covered the Liberty Bell Catch Tournament in 2014, 2015. That was also run by Snake Pit USA. I think Raul Ramirez defeated Anthony Sansonetti for the heavyweight championship. And who was there? Tom Velasquez won. You know, I wrestled Tom Velasquez. I fought Tom Velasquez years ago, and he beat me. Beat the crap out of me. He beat me like 15-20-0. It was just really embarrassing. He was just moving from position to position on me. He didn't submit me, but it was bad. And I was heavier than him. I think I definitely had him in the weight area. I don't know if he's competing, but he competed at the Liberty Bell Catch Tournament. And, of course, you've got Curran Jacobs that's competing. Curran Jacobs, Michigan Spartan wrestler, team captain, undefeated MMA fighter, actor, and the best catch wrestler. This is a guy who submitted Travis View in his last catch wrestling match. He's undefeated in catch wrestling, and him and Josh Barnett have been having feuds, or an online feud, for a long time. I interviewed Curran about 2 years ago, and Josh Barnett was not happy about it. Josh Barnett emailed me, emailed my producer, this, you know, long-winded response, talking. And then we got a whole bunch of stuff on the forum from some of the Snake Pit guys, and, you know, calling us this, that, Jake Shannon, the other guy, whatever. I wasn't not going to have Curran Jacobs on the program, and I offered Josh to come on. And as always on Carson's Corner, we were very fair, okay, and we did our research. We did our homework for that interview there. And so, you know, we had Curran on the program and got to learn a little more about him. And he's always wanted to face Josh Barnett in catch wrestling. And Barnett never competed in catch wrestling before, or Yeah, never competed in a catch wrestling match. All right. So, you know, you got a lot of interesting aspects to this. Curran is you know, very, very small by catch wrestling standards. So we're talking Curran's probably going to come in at maybe 200, 210, 215 against Barnett. Well, you know, Barnett's fighting in the opposite bracket as Curran is. And I don't remember who Curran's opponent is. Johnny something, who's a MMA fighter and I think collegiate wrestler. I lost all my notes on this. I took a whole bunch of notes. But, you know, he's fighting, and I think it's Johnny Bell, I want to say. Let me try to look it up here. This internet is just offensive. I mean, I buy an internet pass from Xfinity, and this is just terrible. I mean, it's just like, oh, my God. What the hell's going on here? This is ridiculous. I can't even – it's like I'm trying to stream here, and my internet is trying to look up this stuff. And so he's fighting, and you got Nick Kajiya, who's in this tournament. I also wrestled Nick Kajiya. He's not fun to wrestle, believe me. It's actually miserable wrestling him. He's about 6'3", 330 pounds, and he's done a lot of these tournaments before. I mean, he's been doing it probably for almost 20 years now, okay? And I don't know who else is in the tournament, but Barnett and a few others. Now, the rules are different. I mean, someone like Barnett, who likes to be on his back, you know, who has a lot of submission grappling experience and a lot of MMA experience, he'll get pinned on his back, okay? Because that's, you know, part of catch wrestling. And these are, you know, I don't know what the time limits are. I lost all my notes. My computer crashed here, and I'm trying to get Curran Jacobs on the program to really talk about this. But it's going to be pretty much straight rounds. I think 10 or 15 minute rounds, and there's going to be sudden death. Overtime, where it's either pinner or submission. They are categorizing this as no holds barred catch wrestling. And so, Curran, they were going to record this, and they said that we're not sure. And Curran said, "Listen, I want my matches recorded." So Eddie contacted me. He's like, "You know, are you going to this?" I'm like, "I wasn't planning on going." He's like, "Curran wants somebody to record his matches because they're playing games." And I said, "Okay, I'll go down there." I made sure I took off. "I'll go down there and I'll make sure that this gets recorded so they don't screw around there, you know?" And I just confirmed with Curran before the show tonight that, yeah, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be in the gym. And I'm going to be recording Curran's matches so we could document this so there's no trickery. There's no chicanery. Because I got to tell you got to respect Curran Jacobs for doing this. You know, he's going – these guys don't like him. They've been feuding with Curran for years because Curran has tried to do his own thing with catch wrestling, the Catch Wrestling Alliance. He's tried to have Barnett compete in tournaments that were – you know, not controlled by Barnett's people and everything. And it's been really, really hard. It's been very, very difficult for him to do that. And he's going into the belly of the beast there in New Jersey where, you know, again, these guys are all in one way or another subservient to Barnett. And it's a really, really hairy situation. I mean, you're going to wind up probably being able to cut the tension with the knife there. You know, and so I respect Curran for doing this. I really do. But I think he's going to win. I don't think anybody there is going to be able to beat him. I think Curran's on a new level. And it would be absolutely great if Josh Barnett and him and Josh Barnett actually got to hook up, you know, and compete. Because, as I said, this was been a long time in the making. All right. This has really, really been something that, has been brewing for quite some time. And I hope that it finally happens. I hope that, you know, Curran can officially establish himself as the best catch wrestler in America. And I hope that, you know, things get settled. I really do. Okay. So I'm going to be going there July 14th in 11 days in Hamilton, New Jersey. And I'm going to record, I'm going to document this, and you know, we'll make sure that everything is fair and square. I just hope they don't screw with me. I told Curran this. I said, Curran, you know, they don't like me. I mean, you know, Josh doesn't like me. These guys, they probably, you know, like they were pissed off when I had you on the program before. How do you know that they're not going to screw with me? How do you know they're going to say, well, you can't, you don't have access to this, or, you know, I don't know. And he said, well, if they screw with us, if they don't allow us to record, I don't wrestle. And that's actually a smart thing to do. You know, you don't wrestle if they're going to give you a hard time. They're going to screw you over with this stuff. You know what I mean? So, I think he's got the right idea there. I really do. All right, we're going to take a brief time out here. I'm going to try to get Aaron Brink on the program. I want to catch up with Aaron, talk about what he's got going on here on Carson's Corner, and we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after... Do I have Marcy Playground on here? I want to play a Marcy Playground song here. I don't know if I have it, though. It's a great song called One More Suicide by Marcy. There it is. Yes, I have it. Okay. We'll be right back after this great song by Marcy Playground.
Christopher Malley went out on a bridge down in Chehalis. Clutching his Bible and a letter from her fell into the river. Pity no one was there, no angels in the air. And the morning paper ran, one more suicide, yeah. His mama stayed by the riverside, down in Chehalis, clutching her Bible and a letter from him, fell into crying. Pity no one was there, no angels in the air, and the paper ran, one more suicide, yeah.
Yeah, what a great song that is by Marcy Playground. By the way, I researched it up and down. I could not find a record of a Christopher O'Malley committing suicide in Chehalis, Washington. I'm not even sure if there really is a Chehalis, Washington. I think there is, but I'm not sure. I think it's like by a college or something like that that the lead singer of Marcy Playground went to or something. I don't know. Nonetheless, it's a great song that I came across on Sirius XM. Yeah, so. All right, we're trying to get in touch with Aaron Brink now, trying to have him call in. It's about 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time here, and it's just so hot in my room here. It's like 1,000 degrees. It's just really bad. I got to go out. I may even go on the boardwalk and, you know, just rid myself of this sweat. I smell some marijuana. I think one of my roommates is toking up here. You know, it's bad because I have the sleep mask. And a lot of times when I put the sleep mask on, sometimes I could smell smells like there's pot, right? That goes right into the sleep mask. But hey, man, it's what it is. It is what it is. You know what I mean? You got to live and let live. Okay. As I said earlier, there's way too much marijuana use in mixed martial arts, and that's a consequence of Joe Rogan. Rogan has really Roganized the sport of MMA. This is a guy, unfortunately, who has the most influential podcast in America. Can you believe that? Joe Rogan's podcast. Joe Rogan apparently makes like $75,000 a podcast, which is ridiculous. You know, he, according to Rolling Stone, he's the most influential podcast out there. What does that say about our society? That this guy, Joe Rogan, you know, he uses drugs on air, makes racist remarks, disparages the obese. This guy is the most, you know, traffics in conspiracy theories. This guy is the number one guy. He's the most influential guy. And his effect on MMA cannot be ignored because you've got everybody now in MMA that has to get high to get by, and it's wrong. It's morally wrong. I don't care about the mainstreaming of marijuana and MMA. I've been around marijuana my entire life, folks. I've never smoked it. But I have family members. I've seen it. And it's just a morality thing. It's just... You know, it's getting high. It's altering your state of reality to get by. It's this sort of, you know, drugs are cool mentality that exists. And I'm telling you, it's got to be up to 90% of MMA fighters out there. Everybody's using this CBD crap, and it's just, you know, it's not even about pain management anymore. I don't care about that. It's about getting high. And that's because of Rogan. And it's really, really unfortunate. But that's what we have here in mixed martial arts. And somebody's got to be speaking out again. Somebody's got to clean this garbage up. Got to make sure we purify the sport. Okay? This is our sport. It's not Rogan's sport. Rogan is a Johnny-come-lately as far as I'm concerned. You know, I mean, Rogan doesn't have any participation in the sport. He's a stand-up comedian, Rogan, who knew Dana White and knew the Fertittas, probably smoked pot with the Fertittas or whatever. And, you know, they gave him a job. Now, I'm not saying Rogan doesn't appreciate martial arts and isn't a martial artist himself. I'm not saying that, but this guy, you know, he's a Johnny Camaita, like all these guys are. He's all of a sudden a tough guy, according to John Peretti. All of a sudden, Rogan became a tough guy over the years. And he has too much influence. He has too much of an effect on our sport and society in general because he generally has a libertarian objective mindset of things. He generally, you know, he's insecure with himself. He has to compensate for a deep rooted insecurity that he has about himself by lifting weights and, you know, acting all macho and everything like that. And this is what you see at UFC events. You see Joe Rogan's all over the place. These, you know, pumped up white, you know, men full of anger. I'm telling you, that's what exists at these UFC events. You know, you don't take my word for it. Just go for yourself. You'll see. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. And it's all in part because of Rogan, ladies and gentlemen. Scumbag Joe Rogan. He's Roganized MMA. And we need to de-Roganize it. All right. Aaron's going to call in right now. Yeah, we're going to get Aaron right on the program right now. And it'll be good to catch up with him. Want to encourage anybody to give us a call, 347-326-9749. We got the Facebook chat room open and live stream going on. I don't know how well it's going on Facebook because I have a very, very slow internet connection, and I don't know if we're even coming out on Facebook. Yeah, I can't even hear anything on Facebook, so maybe just a dead stream. I don't know. But nonetheless, we're broadcasting here on Blog Talk Radio and also on Facebook, part of the Facebook live stream. Okay, so you got us on both platforms here. All right, let me give Aaron the number again. I don't see him calling. Let's see here. 326. You're on hold. Oh, yes, there you are, and you are on hold. Let's welcome back to the program a man who needs no introduction, a man who's fought in the UFC, fought in major MMA promotions, has God knows many fights, God knows how many fights, and is a real, real gentleman, Mr. Aaron Brink. Aaron, welcome back to Carson's Corner, man.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate being on the show.
It's good to catch up with you. It's been a while since we spoke to you. If I'm not mistaken, your last fight was a victory over a guy named John Rizzo, who's a boxer out there over on the West Coast, looks like a hard hitter. Tell us what you've been up to since the last time we spoke to you.
Okay, yeah. There's a correction on that. My last fight was against William Little Bear Johnson in Gladiator Challenge on March 31st. I did fight twice in March. I fought March 4th against John Rizzo. I began training with John Rizzo after that fight. I liked what I saw. John Rizzo has he's got a lot to offer the sport. He's a heck of a guy. He has a great personality. I was like, I want to train with this guy. Let's see if I can patch some of the holes up in his game. And I can just say it's going to be a heck of a lot harder to beat John Rizzo after I got a hold of his, training with him.
Now, okay, so you fought Rizzo, then a few weeks later you fought again for a Gladiator Challenge.
I did.
So what happened? Because I saw the Rizzo fight. What happened in the fight after that?
Okay, the Rizzo fight. I kept training. I figured I wanted to get a couple of fights in, but I was scheduled to fight Ashley Epps, I fought against William Little Bear Johnson, and in that fight, even in victory, I submitted him in the first round, but I my head collided with his head, and I had to get 7 staples in my head, and anything can happen in a fight. I even questioned if that fight, if it would have gone on, I would have been stopped because of the bleeding, but luckily I was able to catch him in the submission real early. But it did. You can't put me out. I couldn't train for 2 months after that. I was pretty much bedridden. I couldn't train and couldn't do anything pretty much because of the severity of the laceration.
What type of submission did you catch him with?
Who are we speaking about?
Your opponent that you're just talking about, the guy where your head collided with him.
Okay, that's William Little Bear Johnson. He's got a lot of fights. What happened was, apparently, when we first came out, I saw the video, but the video footage that I have only shows after the collision took place. But I guess it was when we first came out, and I changed levels, and I think he had the same idea, so we kind of collided, and then we ended up up against the cage, And then I just pursued him and got cage control, center-lined, and got the takedown and submitted him. But it was just an unintentional head collision.
So now is that two submission wins in a row now?
That would be three submission wins in a row. It would be the one June 17th, 2017, against Eric Smith. I submitted him with a rear naked choke, first minute, first round. Then I submitted John Rizzo with the Boston Crab. I call it a Boston Crab. It's also been referred to as a scarf hold, but I can go into that in a minute why I call it a Boston Crab. And then the third one was the submission over Little Bear. And that was also the first minute, first round.
Now, are all these fights, were all them for Gladiator Challenge?
Two of the three were with Gladiator Challenge. And the other was California Cage Wars. And that is, I took that fight on one day's notice. I called the promoter and I said, hey, is there any heavyweights? He goes, hey, I got a heavyweight. And he said, he's a guy, he'll fight anybody. And I showed up, I saw him. I was like, wow, this guy is stacked. You know, if you look at John Rizzo, he doesn't look at like any pushover. I nicknamed him the Jugger Shark, kind of a hybrid between a juggernaut and a muscle shark.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you're you know, and now what's your status with the Gladiator Challenge? Are you still the heavyweight champion there?
You know, I saw somebody running around with my champion belt that night. The heavyweight champion. They have a new champion of the organization, I do believe, and it's an old friend of mine from years ago. Ben Davis, I do believe, is the heavyweight champion of the organization. I don't know how that happened, but as far as that, I am not the heavyweight champion of the Gladiator Challenge, nor am I the interim champion of the Gladiator Challenge. I am basically, I won a super fight belt that night over Little Bear, and it was a catch weight, 215-pound fight, so it was a catch fight. So I am not the champion of Gladiator Challenge.
So now, are you at all looking to go back there and fight this guy for the championship, or what are you looking to do from here?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I'm gonna take a moment to reflect on that. My choice right now is I have retired from the sport. I was gonna fight Ashley Epps, which would have been an awesome fight for me. I had a good game plan. And as far as that was concerned, I just kind of pulled out with the injury. I couldn't train, and I figured, you know what? I retired a champion and a winner in MMA, and I have my dignity. And I just started focusing on training the fighters that I started training, John Rizzo, with John Rizzo, and the other guy that I trained is Gordy 10% Gaydon. But if, in fact, I mean, there's a lot to talk about. John Rizzo will be fighting against Ashley Epps at 205. I predict, you know, John will knock him out. If in fact that does not happen, I mean, honestly, not to be rude, but I mean, I really like John Rizzo's chances in that. But if he doesn't win that, I would like to go ahead and come out of retirement and face Ashley Epps if that happens. But I do predict that John Rizzo will make a nice knockout that night. I mean, Ashley's a really good striker, but John Rizzo hits like a freight train. And I don't see that Ashley has any MMA pressure that could get takedown on him. And, you know, we worked a lot on the ground getting John Rizzo ready for his fight against Domingo Cuero. You know, working him off the bottom, I don't think he's got enough MMA pressure for John Rizzo. And I definitely don't like his chances against John's power punching. John hits like a freight train.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is your? Do you have? Are you still training at all with Sean Loeffler?
The logistics of, you know, it doesn't make sense to go all the way up there. I love Sean Loeffler and I love the compound.
Yeah.
And if and ever I do fight, I do represent the compound fight team. However, I have a job as a trainer at Undisputed down in San Diego. We have everything I need down there, and Sean has given me the okay to go ahead and just do what I need to do down there, and he doesn't have a problem with me training guys out of there, but I am most definitely always at heart a team compound guy.
Oh, good. Okay. So I'm sure that, you know, or there is a possibility. I mean, if you do come back, you know, you could still continue to train with Loeffler. I haven't heard from Sean in a while. Do you know what he's been up to? He was boxing last year a lot. You know, he was doing pretty well in boxing, and then I don't know what happened. Is there any update that you could share?
I'm not at liberty to say as far as what's going on with Sean, but I definitely know that he's having a good personal life. And I see good pictures of him on the internet with his daughter and stuff like that. I stay in contact with Sean, but if I do come back to the sport, you can bet that I'll have my camp to get ready for my fights. I will have Sean in my corner, and if I come out of retirement, that's an if, and I will be a compound guy.
You know, you mentioned you've got three submission wins in a row. Your experience and everything like that, it makes you a really, really solid name in MMA. You know, everybody knows who Aaron Brink is and your punching power and you know, everything you've got going on. And we're seeing guys in mixed martial arts. I'm seeing guys like Jonathan Ivey and Travis Fulton and other guys that are fighting each other and still active. I mean, even though, you know, these guys are maybe would be considered up there in age. There seems to be a possibility. There definitely could be a possibility. Like if you did come back and you string together a couple more wins, that, you know, an organization like Bellator or PFL or whatever, you know, would potentially be interested if they're running a local show in your neck of the woods. Is that something that you at some level aspire to, Aaron, to fight in Bellator, PFL, or is it just, you know, it doesn't really make a difference to you? You've fought in the big shows, and you know,
well,
it doesn't really kind of matter.
Yeah, I've been to the big shows. I've been to the major leagues before. I've been there, and you know, and I consider Bellator and UFC and those shows you're talking about, that's the major leagues. But as far as I'm concerned, I have my dignity. And if I did go back to the sport, I'm very realistic at this point. You know, I'm 43 years old. And it's not so hard to find guys that can, you know, that can beat you out there these days. But, you know, it has to be the right fight. You know, I wouldn't fight some dog fight over in a smaller organization. I would have to be a Bellator, or it'd have to be a UFC. And if I were to come back, but, I really only have an obligation to avenge John Rizzo if, in fact, he does lose that fight against Ashley Epps, which I really don't think that's going to happen.
Right. And we'll have to see what happens with that. But, if I can give my opinion, I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see you at some point come back and fight again. I just think that you have that fighting spirit inside you, and that's a hard thing to break with some guys. I mean, you know, you look at someone like Chuck Liddell. Chuck Liddell now is 48 years old. He's coming out of retirement to fight Tito for a third time. You know, Randy and you know, all these guys have fought well into their 40s. So, you know, wouldn't surprise me at all if you fought again.
You know, and my wife to be, I'm getting married this Saturday. She wouldn't like to hear you say that, but I hate to agree with you on that. You know, Bob, I just might end up in the cage again, but you never know. As far as I'm concerned, though, right now I am retired. I'm just concentrating on John Rizzo, helping John and helping Gordy out at this point.
Now, let me ask you, when you look back in your career, my internet is down, so I don't have any access to the fighter databases. And some of those fighter databases are inaccurate anyway. I mean, SureDog and Tapology, they don't get a lot of fights. And I've had so many fighters over the years complain to me about the inaccuracy there. But you probably started somewhere, you know, in the 90s, maybe mid to late 90s, if I would imagine. You've had, again, a long, long storied career, having fought some of the biggest fighters in the sport and in the biggest shows. What to you is your most proudest moment in the sport of mixed martial arts?
I will be honest with you. The proudest moment I ever had was when I fought Valentine Overeem. I persevered past, black belts in jiu-jitsu at the time. I was like a blue belt in jiu-jitsu. I wasn't picked to win that fight. It wasn't brought there to win. If you looked at the purses for those fights, I was paid $3,500 versus his $25,000 when others were dying to guaranteed purse. So, I mean, it was like, you know, that was the biggest thing in my career. And that was like when things went south for me that night. I met Vince Foyer, you know, the producer in the, erotic films, ended up going another route. And because of my exposure that night, I almost feel as if that, and I can't say I was lucky because there's no such thing as luck, but I mean, it was like, I was like, if you look at the odds in the casino, it was really, I wasn't favored to survive the first round even. And I was able to beat Overeem. That was the biggest win I ever had.
That's cool. Yeah, I remember seeing him fight on different Strike Force cards, and he's a big guy too. I mean, I don't know if he's as big as his brother, but he's got to be up there in size, you know, and certainly has a lot of experience in kickboxing and MMA.
I fought both Overeem brothers. I fought Valentine and I fought Alistair. I was dumbfounded by the strength of Valentine Overeem. I've never been able to be taken down, and I could not stop the takedown. It was horrifying, and I couldn't fathom, like, how is this guy so strong? Tito wasn't able to do that to me. There's guys in the camp that I was training with, Rico and all those guys. This guy was like, he was so strong. But the younger brother, Alistair Overeem, at the time he was a lot. He was like the 215 pounder Alistair Overeem. When he was a lighter heavyweight, light heavyweight guy. And he appears to be much stronger now as he has grown in size and as he's put on all that muscle mass. I'm curious to see what his strength. I'm sure it's a lot like the strength, that monster strength that Valentine had.
Yeah, that's right. I'm looking at your record now. You fought Alistair about a year and some months after Valentine. And
what happened with that? I became a porn star, and I was doing nothing but films. I was working in that industry, and I was working like all the time, constantly. I get this call from Too Hot to Handle, which is a pride organization in Holland. I go over there and I'm like, hey, you want to fight this next weekend? We'll pay you 10,000 euros, which is like 13,000 US dollars to come fight this guy. And I was like, wow. Or whatever that was. It was a lot of money for me at the time. And I was like, heck yeah, I didn't train one day for it. You know, but I went over there and I fought. But I did. He wanted revenge for his brother's loss. And I was like, well, I'm just going to go over there for a nice vacation and try to make this look as good as I can, you know. And it's not the most professional thing. It's not good for a fight record. But, you know, that's the way it went.
What about, like, you know, back in those days, I mean, we're seeing the sport now is trying to catch up with fighters in terms of USADA. I mean, I USADA is not 100%, but I think USADA has done a decent job, at least with, you know, cleaning up the sport with random testing and all this stuff. Back then, I can't imagine how rampant the steroid use must have been. I mean, do you have an opinion on that? I mean, is it fair to say that most of the guys back then were on what we would call PEDs now? Because I've spoken to promoters. I've spoken to UFC brass, you know, back before the Fertittas took it over. And, you know, they've told me, you know, 95% of these people are on some sort of steroids.
Well, yeah, and you're taking a consideration the testing they're doing for them. They're taking a urinalysis test that tests like hours back, and I mean, you can beat these tests like with at the worst case scenario, like come off at a week before or something. If in fact that these guys are doing, I'm not going to confirm or deny any of that stuff. I'm not going to pull a what's that guy that baseball player that went and told everybody. But I'll tell you this: I mean, I do believe that people use them. And I think that those tests, when somebody gets, you know, he pisses somebody off or it becomes, I think that people only get tested and busted on those things when it becomes a political issue more so than if, because I mean, I think that they think all those guys are on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I fought back then too. I mean, back in 2000, 2001, 2002, and in the New Jersey, in the MMA scene, there was no drug testing because a lot of the tournaments and a lot of the cards were unsanctioned. And so, you know, there was no oversight on the part of the Athletic Commission. I know out there in California, and I'm sure a lot of these organizations you fought for were regulated, because you look at, you know, WFA and Rage in the Cage. There must have been some oversight there, but I know that it was definitely rampant, and it's still probably.
Yeah, I know one thing about steroids, though. Steroids do not help you. Your cardio, it kills your cardio. I'm going to say it straight up. I have used steroids in my life, okay. And when I have used those, it kills your cardio. And I will quote Tito Ortiz. Tito Ortiz does not use steroids. He never has. And he's the guy who told me, hey, Brink, steroids and MMA don't mix. And he always said that. Do your cardio. It's about cardio. It's about, you know, use creatine, use the natural stuff like that. And that's what Tito always told me. And I'm with Tito on that, you know, because, I mean, you gas. Steroids gas. Get all bodybuildered out and all muscle down, you know, and you get all mm-hmm. – you get ragey. You can't. You lose your control. You start to load. You load up. You panic. You have this anxiety about you. And it's hard to get that comfortable, like that timing and the rhythm. And it's hard. You can start to panic when you're fighting. And it's almost like you have this anxiety, you know. Because I have done it before. And it's just I prefer much rather, like I am now, you know, a clean guy of all mind altering substances and any type of sports enhancing stuff. I don't do anything, any of that stuff. And I mean, my body looks like, I don't look like a bodybuilder, but those guys that do that stuff, they gas, man. I mean, steroids make you gas.
Do you still, have any contact with Tito?
I have not spoke to Tito since he worked my corner when I fought Jeff Ford in 2005. I missed Tito a lot. I think that there was a little misunderstanding I had. I had some personal issues. I had some problems with the law back, and then the cops were over there at the gym looking for me. I don't think Tito was having liking that too much, and I completely understand. My personal life and then my story on television was, you know, the intervention and, you know, the adult entertainment, all this stuff that went through. I don't blame Tito for not wanting to be around something like that. You know, I love the guy. I've been his friend since we were good friends in high school, junior high. You know, he got me into this sport. He's one of, you know, if it wasn't for Tito Ortiz, I wouldn't have fought in the UFC. You know, he was my friend and training partner at the time. Tito's a really good guy. I really look up to him. He's a really good, person. He loves his fans. People really get down on him, talk shit on him because the way he carries himself or whatever, but they just don't know the real Tito Ortiz. That's all. Not the way I do.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, it's interesting. It really is, but because you've been around some of those guys, you know, Team Punishment, and everything like that, and
they got a lot of characters over, and they had me at the time when I was in Team Punishment.
Got a lot of history there with those guys, and.
Yeah. Hello. Did I lose your call? Oh, I'm still on.
All right. Yeah, you were just cutting out. I can hear you now. Can you hear me? No.
I can hear you now. I can hear you, Bob.
Yeah. You were saying that there's a lot of characters, and then you got cut off.
Oh yeah, I was saying at that time in Team Punishment, there were a lot of characters. You know, we had the Rampage, we had the Rico Rodriguez. You know, the Tiki Josen, Razor Rob McCullough. There was a lot of colorful characters. Bobby Gamboa, all these guys were over there. They're really colorful characters. You know, so but it's a lot of it's show. Jason Mayhem Miller. These guys were, you know, they do that because they're showmen. That's what their business. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello.
All right. Well, I'm hitting a bad. We're gonna try to reconnect with Aaron here. Aaron, if you can, give me a call back at 347-326-9749. That is 347-326-9749. I don't have too much anymore. I just wanted to give him an opportunity.
Dead spots.
All right, we're back live. I don't know what happened. I think I lost my internet connection here. But Aaron is back on the line with us. Aaron, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine now. I don't know what happened there. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, it's probably my fault. I think I got booted from the internet for a brief second or so. So listen, we're kind of winding down here. I just wanted to touch on a couple things here, and then I wanted to give people information on you know what you've got going on with your new job and anywhere that you want to direct people to. Have you spoken at all to Dan Quinn recently?
I haven't spoke to Dan Quinn. I would say it's 2016. I was last time I saw Dan, and I had a couple times where I talked to him on the internet, you know, a little bit. If it was really him, I'm hoping it was him.
Yeah. I haven't spoken to him in probably, you know, 3 or 4 years. It's been a weird ever since I got back to New Jersey. I was, you know, living with Dan for a little while, then I got back, and I don't know what's going on. I hope he's okay. I think there was a video that somebody released, a documentary called The Saint of Stevia, and Dan was in it, and he looks pretty good. So hopefully he's somewhere in Sacramento doing well for himself.
Yeah, when I was in Sacramento, I drove by his old place, and he didn't stay where he was at before. But I was thinking about him, you know, and I really wanted to see him, but I didn't get to see him. I was just with my brother and his children out there and hanging out with them. But I'm hoping he's okay too.
Likewise, absolutely. All right, so let's give people at home any information that you want, any sites that you want to direct them to, or anything that the people at home should look out for.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm training over at the Undisputed San Diego in City Heights there off of Marlboro and University Avenue. We have classes over there. I'm teaching MMA. We're doing cage control, mat work, you know, open sparring, everything like that. I'm doing privates. All ages and experiences welcome. We are doing it on Mondays, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. and then 4 p.m. on Saturdays. And that's going to be just like an open mat. And as far as like privates, anybody can come down. I'd like to people to, you know, come out and check out my fighter, Gordy Gayton. He's got some stuff coming up here. We're really tentatively looking for the King of the Cage. We're looking at King of the Cage in September. We're trying to put an opponent for him. He had some issues on a fight. We're trying to fix that problem right now, but you know, we might be, you know, we're just looking, we're kind of looking around for a fight for him. But he's a 1-0 fighter as far as I'm concerned. And then look for John Rizzo to fight Ashley Epps on the I think he's fighting the 29th of July in California Cage Wars. That's where John Rizzo will be fighting. And so look for those two guys. I'll be in their guys' corners on both of those.
Good, good. It sounds like you're really giving back now to the fighters and giving back to the sport. So that's very, very encouraging to see, Aaron.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you coming on the program again. It's always great to talk to you, and we wish you the best, and I hope you do well. And, you know, if you come back, let us know, and we'll certainly be watching. So, again, thank you very much, Aaron, and take care, my friend.
Yeah, I want to give my fiance a shout-out, Angelica Moran Brink. She's going to be my wife on Saturday. She's the best thing that's ever happened to me. I think that's behind every good man is a good woman, and she's an awesome woman. She's my little Loganette. Other than that, I give my you know, family love and out there, and just keep your head up.
Well, congratulations, my friend. New chapter, very, very important. And I really appreciate it. So good luck, and we'll talk to you down the road, Aaron. Take care, man.
Thank you. Look for John Rizzo on the 29th.
Absolutely, my friend. Have a good one.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, that was Aaron Brink here on Carson's Corner. It's good to see him giving back to fighters, training and developing fighters, and still being involved with the sport. Very, very important. Aaron is again, somebody who's fought the very best and really has a history with the sport and a genuine love for the sport. And that's, you know, really, really important stuff, because you don't hear about guys like Aaron Brink a lot of times with this Johnny-come-lately MMA media, you know, the Johnny-come-lately media that could care less and doesn't want to talk about some of the pioneers in our sport, even on the operation side, guys like John Peretti and whatnot, who get airbrushed. It's really, really unfortunate. But again, thanks very much. Really, really appreciate Aaron for coming on the program. Real quickly, I want to give you information about how you could keep up with me. Just go to facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You could friend me on Facebook and keep after the show on that website. You could also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And make sure to follow us here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. We do the show whenever we can. We also have a political show that we do every Monday from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. here on the same Bat channel. And we hope that you like this. Thanks to the folks over at the MMA community for supporting us. Dirk Ballard, great guy over there at the MMA community. It's becoming a very, very viable alternative to the underground forum. Big thanks to everybody listening out there. And we'll keep you apprised. We got the Catch Wrestling Tournament coming up July 14th. Look forward to that. We'll be filming Curran Jacobs there. And we'll keep you posted. Hopefully we won't get into too much trouble over there. I'm Bob Carson, ladies and gentlemen. And until next time, show some respect.